I see in your eyes the same fear that would take the heart.
Now is the time for us to rise to our
For a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heavens of adventure.
Now is the time for us to rise to our
feet. Day may come when courage of men fails, when we forsake our friends and break all bonds of fellowship. But it is not this day.
Now is the time for us to rise to our feet. And as we sail along, I never fail to be astonished by the things we'll do for promises and a song. Welcome to the Kingdom of Heavy. Here's Adam Johnson and Joe Compton.
Welcome through the gates and enjoy. Sit down, grab a book, put on some headphones. We're going to talk some metal and fantasy for sure, because we, for the second time in our history, have a guest, and we're really super excited to have a guest. By the way, I'm Joe Compton, and this is Adam Johnson.
Hello. And
we are ready to talk to our guest. So, guest, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for us and tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, hey, folks, I'm Karina Gantis. I am an author. I write in many different genres, but I write also in fantasy. I love fantasy. I'm also a lover of heavy metal music, especially Iron Maiden, Up the Irons way. And I'm here to talk about fantasy and rock music.
Yeah, for people who don't see, because you don't see because you're listening, Karina's got herself a Iron Maiden shirt on right now. We also we want to pay our respects this week to a fallen comrade. Adam and I were just talking last week about how they'd done a documentary on metal, and they were about to release a metal album, and so it's very relevant to our community. I mean, even if it wasn't, even if you argue that the Foo Fighters are not metal, which they aren't, but I mean, even if you say that, they're rock. And Dave Grohl has been such a champion of metal for a long time. He put out that Probot album with a ton of metal folks. That was awesome, with Lemmy and Venom and so many others that he put together. That was that's one of my favorite albums of all time, actually. I really dig that album. But yeah, Dave Grohl's always been, and of course he's the drummer of of so many bands, and Eagles of Death Metal and all those other great things he's done in side projects. And he's been a guest on I think it was an Overkill album. There was a band that put him as a guest on one of them, where he played guitar and stuff like that. But he's not the person we're memorializing.
he's great. He's great, yeah. You know.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
But I just want to put context on it.
Of course. Yeah. Of course, we're talking about Taylor Hawkins. You know, if you pay attention to any type of music news in general, it doesn't even have to be metal news, if you pay attention to music news at all, you have heard that, you know, Taylor Hawkins just recently passed away, and it's a big hit to the music community in general, you know, because I mean, he was a part of one of the biggest rock bands on the planet. I mean, Foo Fighters are massive. They will sell out arenas anywhere they go, and they're also like the they deserve that as well. They put in so much time and effort into their music and building up community, and you know, like just so many iconic songs. You could pick almost any of the songs that you remember from back in the day, and they're all iconic, you know. So, and he had a lot to do with that, Taylor did. So it is really sad, and he tragically passed at like 50 years old. Like, that's way too young to be going. And I mean, it really sucks. And Foo Fighters have canceled the rest of their festival appearances, and you know, anything else that they were doing, they're like, nope, we're not doing it right now, you know, we're taking this time to grieve, which is awesome. You know, I've seen bands lose members and then they get someone to fill in real quick so they can make their tour dates and everything, which is Which is okay. Wrong. You know, I get wrong, it. Wrong. It's a business. The show must go on kind of thing. But at the same time, I really respect, you know, Grohl and the Foo Fighters camp a little bit more now, you know, that they're like taking this time to pay their respect to their family and, you know, not just heading right out on the road because it wouldn't do right by his name, you know. So I really respect that they're doing that for him.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have one of the most iconic albums of the 20th century without Taylor Hawkins, and that's Jagged Little Pill from Alanis Morissette. He was the drummer for that album.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Wow. So wow. She gave him his start. Yeah, he was just a sessions musician, and she hired him to be in her band, and they toured the world with that album. And of course, obviously, that album became iconic and is one of the. Mm-hmm. The regarded as one of the best albums ever made, and so yeah, he was a part of her band to start with, so this is, you know, it's a sad loss for a lot of people, and you know, you wanted to touch on, Adam, the context a little bit as well, and kind of,
yeah, and I don't want to take up too much time because we want to shine some light on Karina as well, and yeah. You know, let everybody get introduced to her and everything. But yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everyone, you know, takes this kind of for what it is. You know, he was way too young. He should not have passed at this time. It's a massive hit to everybody, and it's just really
senseless death.
Really, really sad, you know. And like, we've seen this so many times where big success can be overwhelming for some people, and you know, it leads them down paths that might, you know, make their life end a little bit early. And I think we all deal with that a little bit on a daily basis as well. Life becomes overwhelming, and you know, something is presented that's like, well, this is a nice way that can make me feel a little bit better, you know. And like, that's how all of that shit happens. And you know, misery loves company, you know. So somebody will find you and be like, oh, you're not feeling good, here's this, and it'll make you feel better, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean? Like, and I just hope that people, you know, take that as a like almost a warning, you know. Like, I don't want to end up like that. I have a kiddo that counts on me, you know. I have people that count on me, and I don't want to, you know, leave abruptly and, you know, leave a negative mark on the rest of their lives, you know. So I just want everybody to, you know, kind of see what it is and hopefully take that as a learning experience. And, you know, like, hopefully we come together from this as well, you know, because it's definitely a sad thing. But, you know, we've seen people from all the genres come out and pay their respects to Taylor and say how awesome of a human being he was. And that's absolutely true, you know. And these things don't define us, you know, like, even though he had a lot going on, you know, and I don't want to like crap on his name or anything like that, but he did have stuff going on that contributed to his death, basically. Yep. And that's what I'm saying. Those things don't define you, you know, you are greater than those things, and we can always move past those things. And, you know, I just don't want to see anything else happen like that, you know?
Yeah, I saw a great tribute from Joan Jett. She was live at a festival, and it was like the day after, like, and she took time out of her set to pay her respects, and then they played I think it was a Foo Fighters song. I don't know their discography as well as I should, but I only know their hits, which there are many, but. I don't know any of their deep tracks, but she played one of the deep tracks, I think, because I didn't recognize the song. But that was pretty cool. That was really neat to see an ambassador of rock like that really pay tribute to somebody, you know, important. So,
yeah, kind of cool. Foo Fighters are amazing and great loss. And, you know, hopefully we'll move forward from this and learn from this, you know.
Yeah. On that happy note.
Not to keep it super negative.
Yeah. Full disclosure, Karina and I have known each other for a very long time now. She's probably one of my older friends. You know, not older in terms of age, but older in terms of growing.
<What'd you do?
laughs> Yeah. Well, I'm old too, so it's okay. You know, I got enough gray in my beard. But yeah, I just. I've known her for quite a long time now, and yeah, it's really cool that she's here, because I do know that she has such a deep love for metal music. We've had this conversation several times, And kind of give us a sense of where you got started with music and how it became a part of your life and a part of your writing, too, because it's really prevalent in a specific series that you do with motorcycles and fun things like that.
So. And that's where it all started. My mum's next door neighbor was a lady to a Hell's Angel. And so we had the bikes all day, all night, coming around. And I was never in the club, but I was always on the outside. So outside looking in. And it was, they were playing stuff like Meatloaf and Led Zeppelin. And Meatloaf just bat out of hell. Oh my God, that album, it's just, I can't really say too much about it. There's just, that was the first introduction for me into rock music was Meatloaf and Bat Out of Hell. And it was actually one of the first albums I ever bought. but that was played constantly in the house. So that really got me into the vibe of rock music. My second album was Best of the Beast by Iron Maiden. After I heard that, I went out and bought every documentary DVD, every album they'd ever done. I was just, it was like an addiction to Maiden. Then I started singing in a rock band. I was lead singer of a rock band and we did gigs around, covers, mind you. No Iron Maiden, unfortunately. And back in those days, I could reach those notes. Unfortunately, now I can't, but... back in those days, we did a Fire and Ice with Pat Benatar. That was hard. Trying to get up there, though. She makes it look so friggin' easy when you watch her on video. She's like, got the microphone. She's just waltzing around, hitting those high notes, but it's so difficult. Anyway, so started off with that, and then I was... singing, of course, in biker bars with the rock band. Then I had my own motorbike. I had a Verego 250. So I've always been in the lifestyle, and rock music has always been part of my life from a very, very young age. And then when it came to writing, it doesn't matter if I'm writing a sweet romance, a young adult, erotica, a thriller, I've always got heavy metal music in the background. And the people are like, well, how can you concentrate when you're listening to... But it's the story they tell through their music. It's the lyrics and the music and the riffs and I don't know, I get lost in the music. And it just takes me where I need to go while I'm writing, especially for fantasy. So I brought the music into my writing, as Joe said. It's always been a part of who I am, and I think it always will be. I feel bad that I didn't buy Iron Maiden's last album.
Don't.
Oh, is it that bad? Is it? Oh dear.
We had some comments about that too. We talked about
standard.
That.
Oh dear. Oh dear. Okay, so I saved myself.
You know, like, you know, if Walmart put out an Iron Maiden album, that's probably what it would be. You know?
It's so funny.
It wasn't bad, but
no. It's just stuff you've heard before, and it's 15 minutes longer than it should be, which is. You know, whatever. But
I liked his stuff. Like one of my favorite albums is Dance of Death because of the epic songs that he does, where he tells a story, and when on stage he plays the character, and I absolutely love that. Other stuff he has been very repetitive. You can tell after so long, all the albums they are getting too similar now. And like you said, maybe that was a waste of their time and money doing the last album because of that reason. We're getting old now. I mean, they'll be on Zimmer frames soon. You know, I don't know. One of them is going to die on stage. I don't think they're going to stop until they actually die on stage. But Saxon's the same, though.
Yeah.
Saxon's about this, so it came out the same time as Iron Maiden, still going, at about the same age, and they're still playing and jumping around the stage with grey hair. It's just friggin' amazing to see this, you know. That's their love, that's the passion and the love. I mean, he's a pilot, he's a gold medalist in fencing, he's an author of children books, but he's a friggin' the best heavy metal, in one of the best heavy metal bands in the world, in my opinion. And his vocals are just, I mean, they call him the air siren for a reason. His vocals are just amazing. So I don't think, I mean, they're supposed to be coming to Greece, Athens, I think, this year. I don't think they're going to stop until they drop.
Yeah, they're on a big tour this year. And like, same with Judas Priest, you know, they just released an album like a year and a half ago, and they're going on a big tour as well. And I think they're touting it as like 50 years of heavy metal, you know, like, so all of these bands have been around for
Scorpions too.
A long time. Yeah, Scorpions as well.
Just released an album, their tour last week.
Def Leppard and like Skid Row, maybe, I think, are doing like a big 80s arena tour
without Sebastian Bach, which is just ridiculous. But
yeah. So like, it's awesome to see all of that still going strong. And, you know, that's all the foundations of what the metal climate has become today, is all of those bands and paving the way for, you know, newer bands to come in and do basically the same thing they've been doing in a different way, you know? With that, Karina, have you been keeping up on, you know, like some of the newer female fronted metal bands, and like, what does that look like to you? Do you appreciate the newer female metal music? Do you love it, you know, or is it just something
such
that you
as
don't identify with very much?
Throw me some names.
Like Ginger is a newer metal band fronted by Tatiana. They're from the Ukraine. And Spirit Box, who's fronted by Courtney LaPlante. She was from I Wrestle the Bear once. There's a new band out called Plush that is all female band, I believe. And they're more rocky. They're not super metal, but they have more of a rock vibe. And Elisa Whiteglaz fronts Arch Enemy now. There's just a lot of them. And like, there's Otep, you know, that she's been around for a long time, but there's a lot coming out now, and a lot of them are super, super talented, you know.
Wow.
And do you think that a lot of that comes from, you know, the Joan Jets of the day, and those people who really kind of championed that when it was a little not as like normal for females to be in the front of rock music? You know, people thought it was kind of weird at first, and then fucking Joan Jett kicked down the door. And like, even like
Susie Quattro,
you know, even back in like the like Mama Cass days, you know, those people were still like
Deborah
shooting
Harry
things up, you know. And
oh yeah, Deborah Harry, yeah,
kind of stuff. Do you think that has anything to do with that, or you know?
I think it starts with that, most definitely. People look up to the iconics, the classics. We call them classics now, bless them, they're still going. Yeah, definitely it would start with that. But I'm way, way, way behind when it comes to female rock bands, most definitely.
Oh, yeah.
I'll
send you some over.
Yeah, please do.
They're amazing. They're
super
talented.
Yeah, please do. I'd like to get it up to date. But
especially
with my
Spirit Box, as Joe knows, I rank them very, very high in our top of 21. And you know, he was like,
oh, that was your number one, wasn't it? No, it was number two, because Trivium was number one.
They're awesome. So
Butcher Babies is just about to release a new album too. That's a dual fronted female band.
yeah their song, is amazing.
I have my my radio show, and I make sure I feature an indie rock band in the break. This is just because I'm so into rock music, and it's given me so much in my life that I wanted to give back to these bands that have never been heard of. And I've heard a few female rock singers through that way. They're not big. You wouldn't have heard their names. I can't even define Reasons, one of them. That's the only way. But they're indie, so they're not big. But given that platform to perform and to be heard, and hopefully people will go and download their stuff, and who knows, one day, you know. But the ones you're talking about, it's really gone over my head. I've no idea.
Well, that's absolutely all right, and that's what we like to do here, is, you know, introduce people to new things and keep things going. And like that's what I love about the metal community, is, you know, things are constantly evolving. New bands are constantly coming out. The sound is constantly changing. Even if it's like, as much as it stays the same, it changes, you know. And there's new genres that pop up. I mean, like the newer rock nowadays, like the heavy rock, but not quite metal, you know. It's like starting to become a little poppy, and like there's a lot of synth that goes into it nowadays. Like for some reason, robotic voices are like,
oh, don't, no, that's the 80s. Like, leave it back in the 80s.
It's coming back.
No.
Motionless and White's new song Cyberhex, they do a robotic voice in the beginning. We Came as Romans did Dark Bloom, and that has a robotic voice in it. Like, so there's a lot of that that's kind of coming back, and it is kind of, it feels a little 80s influenced.
Yeah,
a little.
That's sad.
Like, what happened to Mr. White? Mr. White was somebody, man. He was on his way to be. I mean, I think he wanted to be the next Marilyn Manson more than he wanted to be the next, you know, whatever. But it's like, man, that their first album kicked ass, and then it's just like, oh, it's so formulaic from that point forward.
Yeah, yeah, they're a bit of a polarizing band, you know. Some people really love them, and some people really hate them. Because, like, he does sound and almost look a little bit like Marilyn Manson, you know, and he sounds like him a little bit when he sings. But I actually think he's a much better singer than Marilyn Manson was. Like, he's actually got, like, range and a bunch of talent.
I was going to say, Marilyn Manson doesn't sing.
Yeah, he basically just stopped.
Hopefully he's a better human than Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, I mean, you heard that for years, but you always just thought it was like, oh, it's the shock factor, you know, Marilyn Manson's just trying to be controversial, and, you know.
No, that's it.
There would be a bunch of people that were like, no, he's one of my friends, he's a good guy, you know, but like, yeah, you never wanted to believe it, I guess, but yeah, I guess he is actually as terrible as he portrays himself to be, so.
I have a question for you, Karina, about music, and you're rewriting or you're repackaging the books you were just talking about in Times of Violence, and the motorcycle trilogy, or it's a quadruple. Is it four books or three books?
It will be four books, yeah.
Okay, so you did a playlist during writing for those books the first time. Have you changed? Has your playlist evolved or changed with rewriting them, or are you going back to the old playlists? And give us some idea of what's on those playlists too. I know I'm throwing a lot at you, but
no, it's I don't know if it was Adam I was speaking to, but I spoke to someone about who would want to hear my playlist that I on a fantasy novel. Why would I write what I was listening to in the front of a fantasy novel, especially when it's heavy metal? It just doesn't go with fantasy. And was it you, Adam, I spoke to about this?
I really think so. We at least touched on it, if we didn't talk about it at great length, but we definitely talked about it.
Well, who wouldn't? You turned around and said, well, who wouldn't?
That's literally
who wouldn't want to know that? Yeah. Okay, so it was you. There you go. Okay, so basically, I was listening to Killing Fields Saxon, the whole album, Number of the Beast, Best of the Beast, Dance of Death, Throw Me Some Albums. I can't remember the names. It's been a while.
For Maiden?
For Maiden, yeah.
Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, Somewhere in Time, Peace of Mind. Power Slave, no Prayer for the Dying.
Maybe. And then there was Metallica, of course. Absolutely gorgeous music. I love Metallica, but when they brought out that album with the symphony, I was just blown away. I remember I've got a documentary of them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, I I got this documentary of them when they did it, documentary of them doing it live together. Yes. And they played...
Enter Sandman?
No.
Is it Nothing Else Matters?
That's it, Nothing Else Matters. So they played that, and he did his bit. They did, the orchestra did their bit, and everyone in the crowd, they were either there to listen to the symphony or they were there to listen to Metallica. Yeah. And at the end of the song, everyone was just screaming and clapping. And he stood up and he went, "You fucking love it. You fucking love it." He was just so surprised that people digged it. And for me, it was just one of the best albums I've heard from Metallica.
Well, yeah, I mean, Metallica's S&M album, like, really shook things up. You know, it was way different than a lot of stuff that was going on at the time.
Totally.
And the only places you really saw that type of stuff was in, like, black metal and stuff like that. It was really exciting to see it kind of move out into the mainstream. And I think that paved the way for, you know, bands like Saxon and Camelot and, you know, that kind of have that, and even Nightwish, and, you know, that have that feel to them, that orchestral feel to them.
I think Metallica themselves were just quite shocked at the response of people that really digged it. And it's like what Miley's doing now. I mean, I only watched what's his name's show when they did it live.
Howard Stern.
Miley. Howard Stern. I watched it on YouTube the other day, and I was like, Miley's singing this? No way. And when she started off that low key, I was like, holy shit, how did she manage to get low like that? Because you hear all of her other songs, she's really high. And then when she rocked out the chorus, I was like, fuck, this is so frigging good. And I was like, I'm going to have to try this, you know. So I got the karaoke version, you know, had to go at it, but nah, couldn't get that low note. Yeah, she just rocked that out. And then Elton playing the piano, and what he said to them when he did that live speech, and he said that Metallica has one of the best songs ever made with Nothing Else Matters.
Nothing Else Matters is...
Like, they were tearing up. Metallica were tearing up when Elton said that, honestly. I mean, so Elton to get involved with heavy metal, it's just... It's like, what the hell's going on? But it's amazing. It's just fantastic because music brings people together. It doesn't matter what genre of music you play.
Yeah.
It brings people together. And it just goes, Miley Cyrus, I mean, she was bloody Hannah Montana 10 years ago. Elton John, he was doing Yellow Brick Road, you know. And to suddenly come together into heavy metal, it's just... Yeah, it's friggin' awesome. And it's like I said with the orchestra when they did that album, it was just, that was the start of it. That was the start for so many people when they saw that, when they heard that, it opened up a new way of mixing genres together.
Not that it was in a good way, but Elton John also contributed to the last Ozzy album. They did a song together.
They did. Oh, yeah.
Terrible, it's so bad.
It was something, you know. I was really hoping, and like I think Ozzy's actually putting out a new album pretty soon with Zakk Wylde back behind the guitar, which is awesome, you know. But he put out an album in like 2010. I can't remember what the name of the album was, but like, or maybe it was like 2000. No, it was 2000. Yeah, like way early
Scream.
2000. And that album had like a grungier, edgier metal feel to it than like a lot of his 80s rock, you know, because his 80s rock was, you know, kind of high power chords, major chords and stuff like that, that was exciting, and you know, and this one felt a little heavier, you know, a little edgier, and I kind of hope he goes back in that direction.
Is it No More Tears?
No, it wasn't No More Tears.
Black Rain?
No, I mean, I can look it up. Not that it really matters right now, but, you know, it was just an album in 2000.
Well, I want to know, damn it. I will
look it up, and I will bring it up.
I'll see.
He goes that way. But again, to Karina's point, you know, he collaborated with Post Malone this past year.
And now Post Malone's doing a metal album.
One of his songs, and then he was on one of Post Malone's songs.
I have to mention Ed Sheeran. Oh, my God.
Did you end up listening to the Bring Me the Horizon song with Ed Sheeran?
Oh my God, I was gobsmacked when I watched that on YouTube from the award show. Who would have thought? Again, I'm saying the same thing. Two totally different genres of music to come together like that and make a friggin' awesome track. It was fantastic. I loved it.
In the same token, though, Lady Gaga butchered Metallica. But
that I missed.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's so funny. For every good example, you could bring up a bad one. You know, it's, the cool thing about Post Malone is he's going to do a metal album, which I think is really cool. So, or a rock album, he says.
Yeah. Well, that's why I've kind of always liked Post Malone, because he's been a, you know, just a metal guy. You know, he like champions the metal community, even though he, you know, puts out rap music and everything like that. He doesn't hide the fact that he loves metal, and that's
awesome.
Part of who he is, you know. Yeah. So like that's really cool, because a lot of people coming up in like the rap industry or even like kind of R&B-ish kind of stuff, you know, they wouldn't put that out there, because it's like, you know, I want to feel like I'm accepted by all of you guys, and I want you to accept me. But he doesn't give a shit. He's like, this is what I like, you know, and this is what I'm gonna do with it. And by the way, the Ozzy album was Down to Earth.
Okay.
Yeah, that one was a little heavier than, you know, what I was used to, and I got excited by it. And then when he came out with his most recent album, I was like, God damn it.
Hardly speak, so I don't understand how he can sing, you know, do a new album and sing, because he can't even do a sentence.
I think it's a little bit like when you hear someone with like a crazy accent, but then they sing and they sing in like perfectly clear, you know, like it's the weirdest thing to me ever.
It's more of a mumbling, though. It's more of him just.
That's a good question. I've never asked someone, you know, from another country. Do you have that experience as well? Like when you hear a singer come on stage, and because for me, always in my life, I've experienced it as like, you know, I've seen Dragon Force and they have like a weird accent when he talks. And, you know, I've seen a lot of Swedish bands that have really thick accents. But then as soon as they start singing, it's like perfect English and I can understand every single word that they're saying. Like, do you have that same experience as well?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm English anyway, so it's not like I'm a Greek tourist or anything. I know what you're saying, but I haven't heard anything from Ozzy for a long while, but I know I've heard him talk and he hardly talks. So for him to be able to, but if they say that with those with Tourette syndrome, that when they start singing, it just stops.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird, yeah.
You know, you sound like one thing when you're talking, but when you sing, it's you're a totally different person.
Well, I'm no doctor, but I think it has to do with like the nervous system, because it uses those muscles, right? So when you're singing, you use all those vocal muscles that are part of the nervous system, and I think it's a triggering between the brain and whatever tick they have it's like a blockage, like, you know, it doesn't, the neurons don't synapse correctly. And I know I'm getting really weird.
You know, when I'm depressed, and I suffer from depression, everyone suffers from depression. If I get my microphone, if I'm holding the microphone, I start singing, the endorphins start working.
That too, yeah.
And I forget about everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And I just get into that moment. And I think that's why I sing in the summer at karaoke when my husband works. I sing PR. I actually get people into the bar by singing songs and then them have a drink and then they'll go and sing a karaoke song or whatever. And if no one does sing karaoke song, I'll just carry on singing all night. But you were talking about the muscles. This is something I haven't talked about much, but I said to you before that I could reach those notes and I would do any kind of ballad from Whitney Houston to Celine Dion, hit those notes, no problem. I've suffered from fibromyalgia, which is a 24-hour chronic pain with the nerves and the muscles. I've had that 10 years. And it took away my love for writing. It took away my love for reading. It took ages till I got that back, and nearly 7 years before I started writing again. I just didn't want to do anything. I was on the couch, just in constant pain. I couldn't think of anything else. Anyway, every year something adds on to, because of this, I get another symptom that comes along with it. Every year it just keeps on coming and coming. And the only thing I had left was my singing. And that kept me going, knowing that I could go get dressed up, go out for the evening, sing, enjoy myself, and then come home and what have you. 2 years ago, I started getting these really sore throats, and I was doing my podcast and I was doing my radio show. And he kept on saying at the end, you know, you've had that sore throat for a long time now. I said, yeah, I can't get rid of it. So I saw a throat specialist, and he told me the news that fibro had come up now and interfered with my vocals, and basically the muscles in the back of my throat get tired too quickly. So when I'm singing, and of course when you sing, you put so much effort into it to get those notes out, that you use your muscles more than you do when you're talking. And so the voice breaks, and he basically said I couldn't sing anymore. And I was like, no, singing is all I've got left. You are not taking that away from me. So I spent the winter just going through all these karaoke songs, and decided and figured out that my tone has gone down 2 or 3 notes. And so I was looking for men's songs rather than female, and I've got a whole range of songs now that I sing, and I'm in the world championship karaoke again, like I was last year, just to prove to everyone I can do it. So I know what my range can do now, so it hasn't stopped me. Like the doctor said, I was like, fuck off, you're not taking that away from me, because that's the last thing that I get pleasure from. I have the passion for all my life. I've had the passion for singing, and that's the last thing you're going to take. And so I proved everyone wrong, and I'm still singing. Not like I was, but I'm still singing, and I'm still having fun, and I've still got that. And it keeps me going. So I just wanted to mention that.
Little fun fact about singing is when people sing in choirs, they found that everybody's heartbeat syncs up in the choir. So like everybody who's singing together, all of their heartbeats end up syncing up. And that, and then
hopefully it's with the healthiest member of the choir, not the least healthiest.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if we want to get like a little theoretical and everything like that, they said that Nikola Tesla said, if you want to figure out the secrets of the universe, look at frequency and vibration. And singing is vibration. You're putting vibration out there, you know, and they found that you can actually put out fire by matching the vibration and frequency that fire burns at. If you match it exactly, the fire will go out, you know. So like if we have all of those things, then, you know, the singing can actually be very therapeutic and helpful. And
it really is therapeutic. Yes, it does. It is therapeutic. It's whether I've got 10 people watching or 200 people watching, just singing just takes me out of wherever I am, takes me to another place. And if you can imagine just singing a normal basic pop song and then singing a rock song, do you know how much effort goes into actually singing a rock song? Unless you two, well, I know Adam would know, yeah. And Joe, I don't know if you've ever been in a rock band, but yeah, a lot of effort goes into singing a rock band. Your muscles, your breathing, you know, you have to breathe from the diaphragm, and it is very different from singing a pop song.
So my singing is for an audience of one. And I hope to keep it that way forever, but I do not mind, I walk every day. I try to walk about 12, 15,000 steps every day. And it's been really awesome to do that. And I put my headphones on and I'm listening to music and I'm singing the entire time out loud and I don't care. But
exactly.
And people look at me funny and weird and because I'm terrible, but I don't care. I just,
exactly.
But I agree with you. I was going to mention too, you guys were mentioning about how it's therapeutic and everything like that. And part of the Marines' strategy, if for anybody don't know, I was a Marine, and part of their strategy was they would take you on these giant hikes, these incredible runs, where they would see how much you were made of. And the way that they would get you distracted is by doing cadences. So if you've ever watched a movie about Marines or anything, you see when they're running, they're singing. It's the reason why. It's because you're concentrating on the singing and you're not concentrating on the hurt and the pain that's going through your body, or, you know, and so that can push you that extra half a mile or a mile,
yeah.
Get you running through sand, get you climbing big mountains. And so it's all part of the strategy behind it. It's a psychology that singing provides. So it also has that element to it as well.
I'm glad we discussed this because, you know, you talk about heavy metal music and you talk about vocals and songs and albums and what have you. But to get to the technical side of how much goes into singing, I mean, Bruce Dickinson, he's the air siren. I don't know how he can talk after he's sung one song.
He also had cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. How can he hit those notes? How can he hold those notes? How can he do the reverbs and then talk normally after? It's just like...
It's all training, you know? It's like the practice makes perfect kind of thing. It's training those muscles, you know? Yeah. Professional guitarists in bands like Iron Maiden or like really big bands that are really hot, you know, they play like 6 hours a day. Like they have to in order to keep up on tour and be able to play notes the right way and everything like that, you know. And it's not just like they're always trying to get better. Absolutely. You know, so they got to put the practice in to get better, but they're also practicing just so they can keep up and keep doing it. And that's like singers have to do that as well. You know, their throat is their instrument. So he's got to sing all the time, practice different melodies and, you know, everything like that. And so he's more used to it now. So by the time he's done singing, he actually feels good. And he's like, oh, thank God I can talk to you guys for a little bit. You know, like let's bring it down for a second.
there's a famous story. It's funny you say that because there's this famous story. It was on when Gene Simmons used to have the reality show. His wife tells this famous story about how when they first met, like she would have to like sleep on the edge of the bed because Gene was practicing strumming in his sleep. He was his hands would flare up and stuff like that. So like she'd get hit in the face and she'd be like, "What the fuck?" You know? So she had to sleep on the edge of the bed. She got him out of that, but it was like. That's because he was practicing so much, it was like just muscle memory. His hands were just doing that on their own.
That is amazing. That's hilarious. So we do have a couple things that we wanted to bring up and talk about, and you know, something Joe wanted to address, something I wanted to address, and then we definitely want to open up the floor to Karina so we can talk about her different works and the fantasy books and stuff she put out, because you know, she's not just here to talk about the metal she loves. She also does a lot of cool shit that you should check out. So first off, you know, I wanted to talk about something I read yesterday that blew my fucking mind. I mean, partly because I was a big fan when I was a kid and, you know, this is all weird now. But so there's been huge controversy surrounding Machine Gun Kelly for months, you know, actually years when you think about it, because he went after Eminem. He went after Eminem first, and then Eminem just smacked the shit out of him, and he switched genres because of that. And he was like, oh, I can't rap anymore because Eminem just put me in my place, you know? So now he moved to pop punk, and then he goes to pop punk, and he decides he's going to talk shit about Slipknot, like the biggest metal band on the planet, like under Metallica. Like, why would you do? I mean, yeah, to like, you know, get your name out there and cause disturbance, get in the news, whatever. But like, man, that's dumb. So, like, he managed to survive that, I guess. You know, like, pop punk hasn't really kicked him out of the genre, but metal fans definitely are pissed off at him.
Yeah.
But, you know, the funniest thing that I read yesterday was that Machine Gun Kelly is now going to become a full-time member of Blink-182. He's going to be a fourth member. They've never played as a four-piece. And now he's going to be a dual lead guitarist with them. And he gets to have equal creative input with their music the rest of the way, you know, with the rest of the band. Like, I mean, him and Travis Barker have collaborated a lot. Travis Barker played on Machine Gun Kelly's newest album, or his debut album, whatever the hell it was, you know. And like I will admit it, there was a couple songs on that he first released that I was like, this is actually pretty good, like, I kind of like this, you know what I mean? So if he had like carried himself a little better, you know, like treated the community better, not even like people in it, just the fucking community, you know what I mean? Like, try to be there for people and help build each other up, you know. He just, all he ever does is try to cut people down. So in that sense, I do not like him, and it's super sad, man, because now I'm like, I don't even want to hear any new Blink-182. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I haven't wanted to hear new Blink-182.
Yeah, I was good about to say that. I didn't want like, to hear them anyway.
If I heard that they were putting out a new album, I'd be like, oh, I'll check it out. But now that they're putting out with Machine Gun Kelly, I'm like, why? Like, why?
Yeah, exactly. Why? Why did they allow that?
I have two questions on this. It is near April 1st. Are we sure this is not an April Fool's?
Yeah, so the April Fools that went around was that Mark Hoppus, or Tom DeLonge was joining the band again.
Oh,
That article went around saying that Tom DeLonge officially is coming back to Blink-182, and people started freaking out, and then you read the article, and it's an April Fool's joke, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of fucked up, but we actually, you know, so they put that out there, and then they give you Machine Gun Kelly. They tease you with like original Blink-182. They're like, come back. But nope, you're getting this crap instead.
You're getting him instead, yeah.
Yeah, then my second question is how long do you think it's going to take Angels and Alleyways to mock the new Blink-182?
I hope so, man. I hope so. That'd be hilarious. You remember when, I think it was the Offspring brought out cardboard cutouts of like NSYNC or Backstreet Boys or something, and they were beating the shit out of them on stage. You know, I hope they do something like that. That'd be fun. Yeah.
I can't wait to see what Tom. I can't wait to see what Tom's response is to this, because, you know, that's crazy, dude.
Tom's wild in his own right, man. I mean, everybody, I know this isn't really metal news, but again, I was a big Blink-182 fan when I was a kid, and I mean, it's all rock, it's all music, you know, so it is what it is.
I get why Travis Barker is so popular, and he played at the Oscars recently too. Yep. But I get why. He's a transcender. He's always been a studio musician. He was on Beastie Boys albums and things like that, and beyond Blink-182, even before Blink-182, really, he was doing that stuff, and I get it. But Mark and Tom were always Blink-182 to me. I mean, their sound, it was so different, it was so unique, and, you know, they did that one song that was making fun of the Backstreet Boys, I remember.
I'm pretty sure
something like that. I don't remember which one it was, but yeah, where they're all in white suits, and like the video, they're all in white suits.
I remember that video.
Those two guys were always the band to me, and it's like, you know, I mean, I get it, Travis is unique and different and interesting, but man, I mean, without the three of them together, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, no, I'm not excited to see what MGK adds to the band. And I mean,
which is like, nothing.
Like you said, you know, Tom and Mark together, that duo, like they're singing mostly, you know, like their musical sound was different. It was exciting, you know, but like their singing together was so different and so interesting, and it was super cool to hear. And like when they put out Damn It, you know, that was such a fun song, and that was their original drummer on that album. The next, I think it was the next album, The one with the nurse on the cover, I can't remember what it was called, but that's when Travis joined the band.
Yep.
And like, he did add a lot to their music because he's very, very technical. Yeah. And in any type of punk playing, you know, it's very straightforward, very power chord. You know, you get your melody, you get your chords, but it's not like anything crazy technical, you know. So he did add that element of technicality to the band and, you know, made things exciting. But yeah, with Tom gone and MGK coming in, I'm just, you know, I don't even want to hear any of it.
Were you a Blink 182 fan, Karina?
No. No. Man. Or Machine Gun Kelly. No, thank you.
Yeah, I've never been a Machine Gun Kelly fan. I do remember Eminem smacking him in the face, but that was pretty fun. I'm a big Eminem guy, but I.
Ooh. And, I heard about it. I didn't see it, but I like Eminem.
He
just destroyed them. He did to Machine Gun Kelly what LL Cool J did to Cannabis back in like the
80s. Yeah.
You just don't mess with the elite. You don't.
He's rap royalty, just like Slipknot is metal royalty, you know.
Yeah, Ice-T called him the greatest rapper of all time. Ice-T called him the greatest rapper of all time. You know?
That's awesome.
That's insane. That's
big. And which, you know, also ties into our world because Ice-T has his own metal band, which is fan-fucking-tastic.
Well, they're getting better and better, too.
Well, yeah, their first album I didn't really like that much. Yeah. It was okay.
The last one was fucking awesome.
But their last album, yeah, is so good. And their collaboration with Max Calvera, All Love Is Lost, that song was so awesome. It was super heavy and just good times. Yeah, it's very cool. Have you ever heard of Body Count, Karina?
No.
Body Count is Ice-T's metal band. So Ice-T was a big rapper in
Carnivore.
The
Carnivore.
Oh, I know who Ice-T is.
Okay, yeah. So he has a metal band. And they started out in like the 90s, the early 90s. And then they disappeared for like decades. And then they just came back in like 2016, 2017, started making music again. And their newer music is actually really good.
Yeah, the last album was called Carter.
He was a better actor than he was a rapper. I'd like to hear his band.
Yeah, you dig it. It's very melodic. It's got a little bit. It's like if Slayer did British New Wave, kind of, with a tinge of like new metal.
Kinda, yeah, yeah. They actually cover Raining Blood.
Yeah.
Who's that?
Yeah, he talks about how he always wanted a band that kind of crossed the genres, where he could incorporate the street mentality of what he does in rap with vocals and include, you know, the bands that he loved. And he's been a fan of like Anthrax and Slayer for as long as they've been around. And so he wanted to incorporate that. And he had a friend who is like a master guitarist. And I don't know the bandmates' names, but his bandmate, the guy who plays lead guitar, was like his best friend from high school growing up. And they used to trade tapes all the time. Like he would give them, and he would give him NWA, and his friend would give him Slayer, and they would kind of figure out a way where they could do it together. And that's how Body Count became Body Count. But
wow, yeah. That sounds awesome.
Absolutely awesome. Yeah.
Speaking of body counts, let's lay one out on the floor, shall
there
we?
There you go.
Go on, Joe.
It is WrestleMania weekend, and I am wearing a Macho Man shirt for people who can't see, but Mr. Chris Jericho opened his big mouth, and I wanted to talk about it. I just read an article on the Pit. For those who don't follow the Pit, you should go follow the Pit. The Pit is awesome. The Pit is a better version of Blabbermouth, in my opinion. Although it's a little bit more, because it's a British, so it's a little bit more tabloidy. So I don't know how viable the story really is, but Chris Jericho has a quote in there talking about how he uses backtrack vocals and lip syncs at times during the song, or enhances the song where he just was whispering. He doesn't have to sing it all the way fully, so that it sounds like him singing the song. And he said how every band does it, he mentioned bands by name, which, like, I think he even mentioned Slipknot in that thing, which Corey Taylor would just fucking destroy him if he did. But because he's wrong. Not hardly anybody does that. That's in metal, because we know what the backlash would be. I mean, Kiss has been vilified for the last 10 years for doing it. Van Halen was vilified for a little while for doing it. So it's like, you know, you don't fuck with that in our community. That's no. Just what you don't do.
I don't think metal fans are even looking for that. You know what I mean? Like, we like to hear the subtle difference
between the album
and the live show. You know, like, we like to hear the imperfections, things like that. You know, so I don't know why he feels like that's necessary. I mean, maybe it saves some of his voice so he can talk on wrestling and talk everywhere else. And he has
maybe he's just crap at singing.
You know, so like, I don't know, but I don't know what his reasoning would be for wanting to
sing live. There's so many. I mean, there's so many famous people out there that when they're in the studio and they're making their album and their voice is just being played around with to make it sound amazing, when you hear them sing live, you're like, oh my God, you know, Rihanna, she's terrible live. Katy Perry can't even hold a note live, you know.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, because they're playing around in the studio and the albums, and they sound brilliant on the songs, which I can't stand anyway. But when you hear them actually singing in concert, oh my gosh. Let them come on karaoke. You've got no knobs to play with, okay? That is raw talent, raw voice. Let's see what they sound like then.
They would lose.
And that's what's really impressive, you know, when you see these bands that come out and, you know, they put out these crazy songs, you know, like Maynard and Tool, you know, his voice is legendary and massive, and, you know, he could, not so much anymore, you know, it's kind of tilting back a little bit and his voice is getting tired, but, you know, he used to be able to do the craziest, like, inhuman things and in concert, like, not just on the album, like, he would belt it out in concert. And if anyone's familiar with like Mike Patton from Mr. Bungle and Faith No More and stuff like that, like, his voice is insane, and he does all of that in concert. And
I don't know how David Draven does it either. I mean, he's another one that can get really
massive.
He has a nice little soprano v alto kind of, you know, when he does Sounds of Silence, he goes into that very alto, and then he brings it up with a soprano kind of thing, you know, not to get too technical, but I mean,
Sound of Silence, Damage, that's another one that, I mean, I love the original anyway, but when I saw that, I hadn't heard it at all, and I saw him do it live, and I was like, who's this guy? Because of course I didn't know who he was at the time. And then when he growled and he got to those, and I was like, holy shit. And so I just played it constantly. My family hate me for it, because every time the TV was on, I was listening to Sound of Silence, because it's freaking awesome. He goes so low. He's got that amazing growl. Just fantastic.
There's a video online of them doing it live, and Miles Kennedy sings one of the parts, like, so they actually do
Simon. Dude, how have you not sent this to me? How have you not sent me this link yet?
I'm sorry, Joe. I needed another reason for you to be pissed at me. So yeah, I thought I would just hold on to it. You know, but yeah, so that actually happened, and Mike, I think his name's Mike Wengren or something, their guitarist in Disturbed. He was saying that he, several times in that performance, he almost missed his part because he was just watching them sing in awe of, like, what was going on.
I want the link. I gotta see that.
I'm gonna make a note. I'll send it to you guys.
You hoarding all these good things, Adam. What are you doing to me? Sorry, Karina. It's our little running joke for the every week. He has something new he has to share with me. This is how I found out. This, by the way, is how I found out about Ed Sheeran and Bring Me the Horizon, because he did this to me and for that one too. And And then he sent it to me, and I was like, "Holy shit, that's so awesome."
Yeah. Well, I really like to hold things and then have people get mad at me when I share it with them a year later. You know, that's my favorite.
I was practicing Shiva.
If I was right there with you, I'd give you a hug, buddy. I'd give you a hug. that's not my intention. I'm just teasing you.
I know.
So I was practicing his two new ones, Ed Sheeran, Shiva, and the other one, to see if I could...
Overpass Graffiti, something like that?
No, the other one. What's it called? Anyway, yeah, those two. So I was practicing them on karaoke just to see if I could use one of them for the audition for the contest. And so because I knew the song and because everyone knows I knew the song, I got a text from someone said, have you heard him playing with Horizon on the award show? And I was like, no, go and have a listen to it. So, of course, I went straight on YouTube and heard it. But it was only got a text from somebody only because they know that I like practicing Shiva.
Yeah. Well, I've said this before. I thought I was being punked at first because it is like just Ed Sheeran at the beginning, and then when Bring Me Horizon comes in, it's just like, holy shit, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Kick drum comes in and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah,
and then when he starts screaming and then the crowd are just going wild. You know, they're there to listen to Ed Sheeran, and then he starts doing his stuff, and they're just loving it. They're lapping it up.
Yeah, they recorded a studio version of that as well.
Yeah,
you know, because everybody loved it so much in the performance. They were like, "Well, let's just do it." Another awesome thing that makes me like Ed Sheeran even more is he's talking with Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth about doing a collaboration with him as well. So like, super super cool. And Joe and I have talked about this on the show before. That it's just awesome that, you know, metal is branching out and other genres are embracing metal as well. And that just brings us to a much larger audience and, you know, just help ensure the good health of our community.
Yeah. Awesome.
So tell us about your journey through fantasy, Karina. What is it? Because now we're at the point of the show where we're at the end, so we're pissing all the fantasy people off and finally talking about fantasy as we do each and every week here.
Which is our MO.
Yeah. So now we're in the back half. We're the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Or so.
Okay, so it was Lord of the Rings, Tolkien. His film, not his books, that inspired me and gave me the idea of illusional reality, which was, I thought was going to be one book until I watched Two Towers, and then illusional reality became a duology. No, it didn't become a trilogy because the third film, it didn't suck.
You watched Return of the King.
Yeah. But, I had the idea for a third book, but I decided to leave it as a duology. Anyway, he inspired me. The film inspired me. Peter Jackson no one could have made that film except Peter Jackson. It's simple as that. No one could have directed or created Lord of the Rings like it is now, one of the best films ever made. But there are no hobbits. There's no elves. There's no wizards. There's no dragons. There is nothing from Lord of the Rings in my book. And yet I have magic. I have what we call powers. I have good versus evil. But it's all unique. It's all never been seen before in books. It's not a typical stereotype. Someone said it's like a fairy tale, and I don't see that. But it's very, very different from normal fantasies. So it's going, I call it a bit like Harry Potter versus Lord of the Rings, because it goes from England and then through into Ticinia, which is somewhere far, far away on another galaxy, another dimension. Who knows where Ticinia is, because no one does. And she finds out that she's not who she thinks she is, and that she's really the ruler of Ticinia, and she has powers. And it sounds like a basic, normal fantasy, but then I go and throw some spanners in and I twist it around, and no one knows what's going to happen. No one knows. And on the end, I do leave, unfortunately, I leave them on a cliffhanger on the first book. It took me 2 years to get the second book out because I got a contract of a publisher who then told me to rewrite both books in deep POV, which is deep first person's point of view, for those that don't know the thing. So I had to rewrite both books for this for the new publisher. So it took another 2 years before the second book came out. And then the second book, the world building in Tesinia is, for me, it's just amazing. But then in the second book, we actually leave Tesinia and we go to the Outlands, which are only mentioned a couple of times in the first book because no one dares go out there. Now they're on a quest to find something, but they go through all these different places that have, I mean, I'll show you now because people can't see them, but this is called a rant. Okay, and it's a half rat and half man. Can you see that, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, good. This is a Griffith. Oh, hold on. There we go. Nasty looking thing.
Kind of goblin-like.
Yeah, and this is called the bus stack. Oh, hold on. See, there we go.
Oh, that's like a beholder from D&D.
It's like a blob. See, someone said something about D&D, but you see, I've never played the game. I watched the film, but I've never played the game. And some people have said
the movie sucked. The movie was terrible.
But these are creatures that have come from my imagination. The world building is from my imagination. The storyline is from my imagination. What I love about fantasy is there is no limit. You know, you can go as far as you want and it's believable because it's fantasy.
Yeah.
And so that's my two books, Illusion of Reality, which is a duology, two books. And there is a audio book of the first book, Illusion of Reality. There's also a colouring book. And there is also a notebook for Illusional Reality. So there's a bit of a little pack there. Yeah, Illusional Reality, I was listening to, like I said, Iron Maiden and Saxon while I was, and Metallica while I was writing it. And it allowed, because of the lyrics, because of the storytelling in these amazing epic songs, it allowed me to... my imagination to go further than it would have if I hadn't been listening to rock music, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've talked about it several times on the show, and it's actually, you know, part of the conception of this show is that there's almost no other genre that matches fantasy better than heavy metal. Like, almost no
other. Yeah, it's hard to believe, but it's the truth.
You know, a lot of stuff that works and, you know, stuff that feels okay. And especially like when you're moving into urban fantasy, you can kind of get away with, you know, a little bit different styles of genre and stuff like that and still have the same creative feel for me, at least. But yeah, like heavy metal matches with fantasy so fucking well.
So well. They are. They're like bread and butter. I can make some
peanut
other
butter jelly. Kool-Aid,
peanut
sugar.
Butter and jelly. Yeah, let's keep going. Let's go. but as Joe mentioned before about my four book MC, it's a dark romance, very explicit in sex and very graphic in violence. And I talk about outlaw motorcycle clubs like Hell's Angels. Of course, they're not mentioned because they're copyrighted and I would get into big trouble. So all four books are like that. And again, I was listening to heavy metal, but I was listening to heavy metal when I was writing my young adult fantasy, my young adult supernatural, my romance.
Quick question though, what did you name your motorcycle club? Was it like, was it Hades Cherubs or something like that?
No, darling. We have the Tyrants, we have the Vipers, we have the Hawks, we have the Wolves. We have the Kittens, which is the female one. You don't want to get on their wrong side. So of course you've got to be careful of the names you use and make sure there's no clubs out there already with that name.
You don't want to get violated for like using like terms like that, you know, you don't want to get sued or anything, but also
exactly
you don't want the Hell's Angels coming after you because you put something out there. Kinds of weird shit of like people putting stories out and they paint them in the light and then, you know, all of a sudden
their name is copyrighted. Yeah. So it doesn't matter what I'm writing, I have to listen to heavy metal music because it's part of me, it's part of my life, and it whether I'm singing it or whether I'm writing, it's always there and always will be.
Are you are you looking forward to or curious about the Rings of Power?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that, I think that about says it all. You know, it's like I really, really want it to be so good, but I'm not going to get excited about it in case it isn't, you know?
Yeah, we just we were talking earlier before you got here, Adam, because This Week in Indies, we talk about the piracy issue going around on Book Talk and everything. And we were talking about Amazon's threshold on customer service. And so we don't trust Amazon very much. And so, you know, this is an Amazon run show. So we're going to see how, you know, I mean, Amazon has a tendency, though, with stuff they don't know to let the people who do know about it kind of do their thing. So, who, you know, the production team behind this is probably going to be more to blame than Amazon, but you know, the blame will go on Amazon if it doesn't go right. We've talked about this before, but
yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like, they can't mess it up. I feel like they absolutely cannot. Like, there is too much on the line right now, and they've spent so much money just acquiring the rights and then making it. Like, and Lord of the Rings fans are incredibly, like, picky, you know, and they have massive standards, and they have huge standards to live up to with Peter Jackson, you know, putting out the movies. Like, if they're not as, if this show is not as good as the Peter Jackson movies, then whoever put this out, the whole studio's going under.
Most definitely. I was a manager of the UK fan club of Lord of the Rings, and I knew everything you needed to know about the films and the books. And they were so pissed that so little things to me that didn't matter, but to them, they should have been in the film. Of course, you can't put everything in the film. Things need to be left on the cutting, you know, on the floor in the cutting room. But they were very very pissed off with left out.
And I'll say Peter Jackson came as close as he possibly can to doing that. You know,
he really did.
I say this all the time, but the one caveat that I really really appreciate that he didn't indulge in is the 45 endings of the third book. But and just cut that, he cut that in half. But you know, and kind of just touched on it.
And the songs. There was no songs or poetry in the first book.
There was in The Hobbit,
but not in Lord of the Rings. When I got the book, I was just flicking through past all these songs and all these poetry. I'm like, what the hell is that doing in the book like Lord of the Rings? It just didn't fit to me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. And they did have the song in Return of the – or I don't know if it was Return of the King or –
No, it was a Fellowship, wasn't it, when he's when Aragorn sings, right?
Well, yeah, Aragorn sings, and then either Pippin or Merry sings for the Steward of Gondor as well in one of the later movies.
I think that
was on the soundtrack. That song.
But I actually think that like the weird poetry dumps and song dumps and stuff like that actually kind of helped like create the high fantasy that we know and love today. You know, because it's so surrounded with like bards and different types of like ethereal feel and everything like that. Like there's so much Tolkien in everything now, you know, like anything you look at, you can almost trace a little bit back to what he did in Lord of the Rings. Aside from the fact that I can barely read the fucking books, like I will always be super thankful for everything that he did. And he helped, bring about D&D, like that was largely based off of Tolkien's work, and that's actually what got me to start writing was D&D. So like I always gonna be super appreciative of him, even if like, you know, I can't do it. I can't read them, man. They're just so long and they're so dry and boring.
I'm the same with the books.
You have
Adam,
to
I'm
read
the same
them
yeah
you know, if you're a big fan, you have to read them once.
You try, we flick through the pages, you mean?
You gotta get an old piece of bread and bite down on it and just read through it. But, like, you know, at some point.
On that note. Thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. Thank you to Karina Cantus for being here. Tell everybody where they can find you, Karina.
Hi. Well, I'm everywhere, but if you want to find my social media links and links to all my books, you can find me on Linktree, and that is link and then tr.ee/KarinaGantas, KarinaGantas.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much for coming on, Karina. It was
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
It's a joy to have you here. You're a wonderful person. I definitely hope everyone goes and checks out all of your work because it's very well deserved. Very good creative work that she's got. So if you haven't checked it out, please do. If you haven't checked out, you know, the new MGK Blink 182 stuff, please don't. If you haven't, you know, listened to new Fozzy, definitely check it out, but maybe don't see him in concert. Other than that, it's been great. I hope everybody has a great week. Joe, thank you as always for being here and being such a great co-host. Karina, again, thank you so much.
Thank you for making the epic journey to the Kingdom of Heavy. You're welcome to stay as long as you'd like. Grab a book off the bookshelf, put on some headphones, and listen and rock out. But while you're here, if you don't mind giving us a rating and commenting on what you liked about the show, it really helps the show get seen more and brings more of us metal and fantasy folks together. Also, while you're here, you can subscribe and share the podcast with as many people as you'd like. We would really appreciate that. So until next time, when the stage is set and we can rock and geek out together, remember to keep it heavy, always.